Hello. Hi, folks. It is Wednesday night at a little bit after 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You are listening to WVEWLP 107.7 FM, Brattleboro Community Radio. And if it's Wednesday night at 9 p.m., you must be listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm Ken.
And I'm Becca.
How's it going?
Pretty good.
Yeah, it is freaking cold.
Yes, indeed it is.
It's supposed to get to like -9 degrees tonight, which I am not, that is not cool.
Yeah.
It's very cool. It's, I don't like it.
No.
I don't like it. We have a tremendously, absurdly,
amazing,
monumentally huge show for everybody tonight.
We sure do.
I'm a little nervous.
You're nervous. You're always nervous.
I know. I'm a little more nervous tonight. So Evan Wolfson, who is just a gay rights champion to the nth degree, will be joining us a little later on in the show, and we will be thrilled to have him. Were you able to check out some gay news this week?
It was a little bit.
A lot going on with Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Did you
yes,
see that?
Yes, I did. But tell me more.
Yes, there is a lot going on with Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So the first part was that an aide to Obama said that ending Don't Ask, Don't Tell is not a priority right now. That it's going to happen, Becca.
Yeah.
But it's not a priority right now.
I know.
Yeah. I think there's a shelf life, though, on it's not a priority. I mean, if it goes for 4 years and it's not a priority, then it won't happen while Obama's there. Or 8 years, I mean. I'm just going with
the
first term. Who knows?
Yeah.
So I'm a little worried about that. And then the additional story about Don't Ask, Don't Tell was that a recent survey by the Military Times magazine indicates that the majority of active duty service members continue to support Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and are opposed to Obama's plan to end it. In addition, almost a quarter.
25%?
Thank you. Of the respondents said that was funny, that an appeal of the policy would have a negative impact on their willingness to re-enlist or extend their service or continue a military career after their current time was up. The vast majority, though, however, would continue to serve. So that's not great. I think that it likely will be delayed for a while.
Yeah.
And so I'm a little worried about that.
Me too.
So if folks want to call in and talk about Don't Ask, Don't Tell, you can give us a ring at 802-246-6107.
Though it will be busy when we have our guest on.
It will be very busy. Or you can instant message us. We're all online. Are you online as well?
I am online.
We're both
as well.
At the same time. So if you want to instant message us, you can write us. The screen name is?
This Show Is So Gay.
Pretty easy. Pretty easy to remember.
Mm-hmm.
So we will play some songs tonight. As always, our guest has requested some songs, so we're going to play some songs. I think that the significance of this song will not be lost on anyone, particularly with our guest tonight. So without further ado.
And these are all the radio cuts, yes?
These are all the radio, yes.
Oh,
these
beautiful.
Have been approved for before 10 p.m. Vermont listening.
Fabulous.
Yes.
Okay,
proceed. Following the rules makes you happy.
It does.
Okay, hold on 1 second, folks.
The world can change, it can change like that, due to one little word, married. See a palace rise from a two-room flat, due to one little word, married. And the old despair that was often there suddenly ceases to be. For you wake one day, look around and say, somebody wonderful married me.
How the world can change, it can change change like that due to one little word. Married. See a palace rise from a two-room flat due to one little word. Married. And the old despair that was often there suddenly ceases to be.
For you wake one day, look around and say, somebody wonderful.
Somebody wonderful.
That was funny, too. There's a lot that goes on when the songs are playing that people don't know about.
Thank goodness.
I would like to say that we just sit here patiently waiting for the song to end, but there's a lot of drama in the station while the songs are playing. But
there
people
is.
Don't need to know that.
No, we were just totally having a cat fight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your forehead's bleeding a little bit. I'm sorry.
Oh, excellent.
And I just got a manicure today, too.
Oh, sorry about
totally
your nails.
Totally did. So a little bit of a shout out to Adam, who is listening there in Boston, where it's a little warmer than it is here. And Adam was a little bit critical. He was a little bit critical of the song selection.
Well, bring it up with Evan Wolfson.
Yes, and we will discuss that. We will discuss Adam being critical with Evan Wolfson.
Yeah, excellent.
And we'll see how Adam feels about that. So a lot going on in the political world, tons that we have to talk about. Pastor Gate, 2009.
I know.
It's dueling pastors. Gene Robinson, if folks have not heard, and I don't know how you haven't, but we'll tell you anyway. President-elect Obama has asked Gene Robinson, the openly gay. What does it mean when they say is V? It says V Gene Robinson. This is not my religion. Is his first name Victor, or is that a religious thing?
What are you talking?
It says capital V
Gene
Robinson. Capital V. Vicar.
Maybe. Sure, let's go.
Or is it Victor? I don't know if this is like a non-Jew thing, and this is more your people. These are not my people. You're just looking at me blankly.
I am looking at you.
All right, if someone knows what the V stands for, please instant message us or give us a call at 802-246-6107.
Stacy, this is a question for you.
So Gene Robinson, the openly gay Episcopal Bishop of New Hampshire, to deliver the invocation at an inaugural event on Sunday on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. Gay rights advocates, unsurprisingly, saw this as a move to compensate for Mr. Obama's decision to give Rick Warren, who opposes same-sex marriage, the high-profile role of delivering the invocation at the inauguration next week. Dueling invocation pastors who will win. I vote for the gay.
I agree.
Yeah, we think
I was woken up in the middle of the night to be told that the new pastor had been selected to do the invocation, and
yeah,
I already knew. So it was kind of funny that I got woken up.
But people are getting very enraged about, this is, if he's going to speak, then he has to speak. And if he's going to speak, well, that's just inappropriate.
Right. And is this one going to mention God? And is this one not going to invoke God in the prayer? Because it's a prayer for the nation and you shouldn't be crossing that line, but you're a pastor. But it's all crazy. All sorts of crazy.
You give your invocation. What would you do?
I don't know.
Come on.
I got nothing, man.
You got nothing?
You're going to call me out. It's like past 9 o'clock on a Wednesday night, man.
And you're starting a new job tomorrow.
I am starting a new job tomorrow, and you want me to think?
I know folks think we don't do anything else but prepare for our show, but we actually have outside lives. Okay, I don't. But
well, I don't have a life either.
I really just prepare for the show pretty much all week long. So that's dueling Pastorgate, and that's we will see who wins next week.
Absolutely, and that's all we have to say about that. Can I just talk about Wanda Sykes for a second, though?
I would love to talk about Wanda Sykes. I adore Wanda Sykes.
Yeah, all I really have to say is Wanda came out.
Yes, no, Wanda came out. She's been out for a little bit now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it was a huge secret, but it's kind of reaching out into the airwaves at this point.
Yes. You know, speaking of celebrities.
Okay.
I was talking.
Celebrity time.
Well, it's celebrity. It's the time for the celebrity segment of our show that I just invented. I was speaking with an unnamed friend earlier on Instant Message, Adam, and I was talking. I was just writing about Anderson Cooper and whether to talk about Anderson Cooper tonight. And to which this nameless person, Adam, said, "Well, what is there to talk about? It's not really a secret that Anderson is gay, but isn't it? I mean, he's not out, and so."
Well, I was just reading a lot lately about how Harvey Milk was for outing people. How do you feel about that?
Well, he was for people coming out. He was for people coming out. I don't know that he was necessarily for, well, I don't know. I never talked to him, but in
these were things I was reading out on the internet, and the internet never lies.
No, it doesn't.
And I don't actually know, to be honest, if he supported it, but a lot of gay rights activists do believe in outing people.
They do.
Publicly, just saying.
Well, just about the hypocrisy of preaching out against rights for gay people and also being gay, and that some people think that they should be outed. I mean, in the movie, not that you haven't seen yet, but you will soon, as soon as it comes out here in Brattleboro. Well, wait, it's not my fault you haven't seen it. It's Brattleboro's fault. It's my fault that I already have seen it. But certainly in the movie and in The Mayor of Castro Street, the fantastic book that, if folks have not read The Mayor of Castro Street, I do not know what you're waiting for. It is a just unbelievable tome that you must check out. There's a scene in the movie where Harvey Milk is talking to a large group of gay rights activists and says everyone here needs to be out. The only way that we're going to change people's opinions is if we're out and if everyone knows a gay person. So I don't know if he was for outing people as much as he's for people being out. And I guess that's my thing with Anderson Cooper. I mean, give me a break. If you watched did you watch any of the Kathy Griffin, Anderson Cooper New Year's Eve?
No.
He was very, very gay.
Wow.
I know I'm not supposed to say that because, you know, it goes against what we're supposed to say. But he kind of
And everything
was.
We stand
and
for.
And everything we stand for. But he was able to name all the...
shouldn't we be open to all sorts of gender expression across sexual identity?
I have yet, and again, I perhaps have not had such broad experiences, I've yet to meet a straight man who knows, as Anderson Cooper did, all the names of the Real Housewives of Atlanta.
Oh my. Oh my.
Can I leave it at that?
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because every man I've dated in my short history of dating men once upon a time, I think everyone except the first one has come out.
Really?
Yeah.
And what's going on with the first one?
And they swore up and down that they were straight and that they were just kind of metro and no.
So what's going on with the first one, though? That's the one we care about.
I don't know.
Is he on Facebook? Can we get him to call into our show?
I don't think we want that necessarily.
I think it would make for good radio.
Though I was just told by a friend of a friend that apparently he's the biggest closet case they've ever heard of.
So
what is that, huh?
I don't know.
Apparently.
We're going to solve that on one of our shows.
Yeah.
I don't know what we're
going to
solve.
But so I was going to say, no, I knew straight guys who knew things like that and who had fairly feminine features but were straight. But no, I don't, actually. They were just deeply in the closet and dating me while I was also deeply in the closet. So
look how you've helped people come out.
I know. I have a bridge. I am.
Sorry, that's going on the website somewhere.
It's just sad.
Becca is the bridge. She is the sexual orientation bridge. We have to get you a t-shirt.
Yes.
I am the bridge.
I have earned a lot of toasters. If you can earn toasters for helping men come out.
I think we should get toasters with our show's logo on them.
I think we really should.
That would be amazing.
That would be awesome.
Were folks to be interested, not that we're endorsing any sites, but we're told by some of our online listeners that you should check out rick a-thon.com. And that's, it sounds like a site to pledge money to LGBT equality for every minute that Pastor Warren will be speaking at the inauguration. So if folks are interested in such a thing, not that we can endorse it, you should check that out.
If it's a nonprofit organization, we just can't tell them how much money to donate.
Yes. Oh, God, you know the rules.
I do.
I love that you know the rules. All right, we're going to play another song, and then I'm feeling somewhat confident that after we are done playing the song, we will be talking to Evan Wolfson. So hold on one second, folks.
I'm excited.
Why are people gay all the night and day, feeling as they never felt before? What is this thing that makes them sing? Rich man, poor man, thief, doctor, lawyer, chief, feel a feeling that they can't ignore. It plays a part in every heart, and every heart is shouting encore. Love is sweeping the country, waves are hugging the shore. All the sexes from Maine to Texas have never known such love before. See them building and cooing like the birdies above. Each girl and boy alike sharing joy alike feels that passion'll soon be national. Love is sweeping the country, there never was so much love.
Spring is in the air, each mortal loves his neighbor. Who's that loving pair? That's capital and labor.
Boston upper zones are changing all their habits, and I hear the cones are taking up the Cabot.
Florida and California get together in a festival of oranges and weather.
Both the North and South give up their hanky-panky as the Dixie Mouth no longer damns a Yankee.
Cities are above the quarrels that were had last. Look who's making love, St. Paul and Minneapolis.
Love is sweeping the country, waves are hugging the shore. All the senses from Maine to Texas have never loved this love before. See the building and cooing like the birdies alone. Each girl and boy alike sharing joy alike feels that passion will soon be national. Love is sweeping the country, there never was so much love.
That was Love is Sweeping the Country.
Absolutely.
Featuring Jack Carson off of the Of the I Sing soundtrack, as requested by tonight's guest, who I'm thinking we're about ready to welcome him.
I think we are ready.
And guest, are you there? I know you're not feeling so great.
Yeah, no, I'm here and happy to be with you.
All right. Well, now we got to do your intro, so you got to hold on for a second.
All right.
Okay. So as we've been saying all show long, and are thrilled to now get to that part of our show, this show is So Gay with Ken and Becca is honored. We are truly honored to welcome.
Pleased and honored and amazed.
Absolutely. Evan Wolfson to our show. Evan is the founder and executive director of Freedom to Marry. I love the part where in 2004, Time magazine named Evan one of the 100 most influential people in the world. Not in New York.
No, not in Brattleboro.
Not in Brattleboro, Vermont, in the world. And Evan was co-counsel in the historic Hawaii marriage case, argued before the U.S. Supreme Court, which we're going to talk about in the Boy Scouts of America versus Dale, served in the Peace Corps, and is the author of Why Marriage Matters, America Equality and Gay People's Right to Marry. Evan Wolfson, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you.
How are you feeling?
Other than this little cold that I think everybody in the world has, I'm doing really well.
How cold is it there in New York, too?
It's pretty cold outside. I'm more worried about the cold I have in my nose, but
okay.
I'm being in there.
And you're drinking lots of fluids?
Of course. Being okay. A good boy.
Evan, there's a lot going on out there in the gay world.
Yes, there is. Well, there's a lot going out there in the country, in the world, and indeed in our part of it. And I think it's just an extraordinarily historic moment in our country. We can all be really proud and excited and hopeful, but I think we also have to be determined and ready to do the work.
We're ready.
We're ready.
Ken and I are on
We're ready,
of it.
And we want to talk about some of these things that are going on. First, if folks don't know, and I don't understand how they would not know, can you talk a little bit about Freedom to Marry?
Sure. Freedom to Marry is an organization based in New York, nationwide, dedicated to ending the exclusion from marriage and to working with all the organizations, gay and non-gay, religious and secular, national, state, and local, as well as individuals who want to win the freedom to marry for gay people. And we work closely, therefore, with groups, for example, in Vermont that are this year moving forward to build on the civil union success and
Yay.
Finish the job by hopefully winning marriage this year. Similar efforts are underway in states like New York, New Jersey, of course, to restore the freedom to marry temporarily taken away in California and to build on the successes that we've seen in places like Massachusetts and Connecticut.
So can we deal with California for a second?
Sure.
Because there's the news this week I thought was fascinating. As I'm sure you know, but to let some of our listeners know who might not be aware, some of the supporters of the ballot measure of Proposition 8 have filed a lawsuit seeking to block their campaign finance records from public view, saying that the reports have led to the harassment of donors. How about that one, Evan?
Well, I just think it's appalling that these people think it's okay to try to stampede through a change in the Constitution to take rights away from people. That's okay. But laws that require open transparency in who's funding what, those need to be blocked. It's just a real example of how misplaced their priorities are. You would think that at a time like this, with the economy hurting, with people really struggling, with so much needed to get the country back on path, that the last thing people would be worrying about is taking rights away from a group of families. But indeed, there are some organizations that are really dedicated to that, willing to spend millions of dollars to do it, and we have to continue to fight to secure the freedom to marry and to get our country back on track and to make sure that we have protection for all families in this country.
Great.
We're for that. I mean, I want to know your first reaction. So you see a story, and we talked about this a few weeks ago, the story, not just the story, but the movement out in California as well to not only pass Proposition 8, but now to repeal the marriages that were done before Proposition 8 was passed. There's certainly coalescing all the action around, okay, we're going to fight against this. What's the first reaction, though? You see this story, it comes across your desk, you hear there's this group of people that have a concerted effort to now invalidate the marriages that are already done.
I can tell you right now, Ken's reaction is he gets angry.
I get
a
angry.
Little bit.
I guess I'm a very forward-looking person, and I always look at it as, what do we need to do to get what we want, to get what we deserve? And the real answer there is not to focus so much on what the opponents of equality are doing, but to focus on the people in the middle, the reachable but not yet reached, who haven't heard our voices yet, and to redouble our efforts to talk to them and continue the movement in our direction. So rather than think endlessly about the No on 8 campaign, that
right.
campaign is over.
Right.
We're now in the next campaign, the campaign to restore the freedom to marry in California and, of course, to win it in other places. And the key element of success in doing that is for more of us to have more conversations with more people about who gay people are and why marriage matters. If we talk to people, if we give them that information over time and make that ask and help them push past their discomfort, they do move in our direction. They grow in favor of freedom and support and equality. But it's not going to happen unless we reach out to them. So rather than spending a lot of time focused on what the opponents are doing, I just think we need to look at our opportunities. Have we talked to the people in our lives? Have we written that email to our old college roommate or to the people we know in California? Have we really talked to our parents and friends about what it means to be excluded from marriage? They may not really know. They may not really get it.
Right.
But it's our job to connect the dots for them.
So how do you stay positive? I mean, I think one of the things that I've talked about, and Becca helps me a ton with this, Evan, but I get really frustrated and when things get so mean-spirited. And
It's going to come.
I know that it's going to come, but there are just those initial moments of reading these stories and even preparing for the show where it's, well, gosh, what are you going to do next? It's so frustrating that why is it that folks have time for this?
Yeah, well, I certainly agree with that, but my own feeling is I actually look at it and I see that we're winning. We are changing things, and things can change. And, you know, we're on the verge of inaugurating the nation's first African-American president, something that not so long ago seemed inconceivable.
Absolutely.
Not long ago at all.
And here it is. America has a real capacity for change, and that may sound like a cliche after, you know, 2 years of hearing about change, but it's really fundamentally true. And we ought to be part of that same momentum. We are part of that same momentum, and we can make it happen. Not so long ago, people thought the idea of gay couples getting legally married was an oxymoron. And now we have it in 2 states. We won it in California. It was temporarily taken away from us. We can win it back. States like Vermont and New Jersey and New York and others shimmer within reach in 2009, with others coming up. All of this change is within our reach if we reach out to people and talk to them. So rather than spending time on, you know, worrying about how bad some people are, I'd really rather focus on how movable most people are.
Absolutely. Evan, do you have any good news predictions for 2009? What do you think?
Well,
where do you think our next move is going to go? And what states do you think are, like, right there? What do you think is the next state?
If we crunch down and have those conversations and support groups like the Vermont Freedom to Marry Task Force and do our own personal work of writing letters and visiting legislators and calling people we know and, you know, just doing that nitty-gritty work of engaging people, we really can win the freedom to marry in states like, as I said, Vermont, New York, New Jersey, Iowa, and others. In 2009, and I'm not even talking about what lies ahead if we lay the groundwork this year for success in 2010 or 2011, which also is on the horizon, and we have to be doing that now. But there are states that are literally within reach this year, including right there in Vermont.
You were the first guest to...
People have to get in. People have to get in and join up and do the work. And Vermont Freedom to Marry Task Force is a terrific organization leading the fight there. I wholeheartedly urge people, gay and non-gay, to plug in with that and do your part.
I must say, Evan, you are the first guest to make us feel like here in Vermont we're a hotbed of action.
Well, Vermont was, as you know, the first state in the country to pass a civil union law. Now,
absolutely.
Civil unions are not good enough. They're no substitute for full equality. But that was an important step forward. And look how quickly Vermont's leadership on that spurred momentum way ahead in the rest of the country, shaping the whole national conversation. Now Vermont has the chance to finish the job and add further momentum.
And it was a big week in New York this week too, right? I was reading about how the courts affirmed the dismissal of a case just about the Westchester County executive and his right to recognize same-sex marriages performed in other states. And I will say that I was proud to be on the LGBT advisory board in Westchester, appointed by County Executive Spano, and was there at that meeting when he signed that recognizing other same-sex marriages into his executive order. And it was a great moment, and I was happy to see that the New York courts affirmed his right to do that.
Yeah, well, the New York courts have affirmed that, and they've also affirmed the governor's executive order to state agencies to follow the law and honor marriages legally performed elsewhere, which is the general approach that states have taken until they began carving a gay exception out of it. The typical practice in the United States, as in the world, is that places will honor the lawful marriages from elsewhere, even if they themselves would not have performed that marriage, because it really doesn't make sense to destabilize marriages rather than to respect them. Unfortunately, there's a gay exception that's been carved out over the last 8 years in this Roe-inspired campaign of going state by state to push anti-gay measures, and that's part of the patchwork of discrimination we're going to have to undo. New York is in the important an interesting situation of honoring marriages legally celebrated elsewhere, but still not allowing couples to marry here at home. And of course, one of our main arguments here in New York is, why should New Yorkers have to go to Niagara Falls, Canada to get married when we ought to be able to get married in Niagara Falls, New York?
Right.
Right. That is pretty...
So what do you say to those folks? One of the growing movements out there, and I actually have... friends of mine who have done some volunteering with some of the organizations that are popping up all over the place that want to just get rid of marriage altogether, that that's the solution is
yes, it's
no
the word
marriage
that yeah. is scaring people is the
well,
theory.
But that's, it, first of all, it's not true. It's not the word marriage. It's the word gay.
Right.
The real opposition to gay equality is not about marriage. It's about gay. And that opposition is dwindling. We are making headway. And one of the reasons we're able to make progress is because using the vocabulary of marriage, the vocabulary of love and commitment and respect and self-sacrifice and dedication and caring and equality, which is what the vocabulary of marriage is, we are helping people understand why gay people need to be fully included, fully respected, fully able to participate in society. Marriage is a terrific engine of equality.
Mm-hmm.
We've made more progress in this movement during the years of the marriage conversation than in the decades before that. So people who think that somehow the obstacle here is marriage and otherwise they're willing to hand us everything haven't really paid attention to our own history. The states where we have the most progress for same-sex couples and their kids are the states where we've talked most about and fought hardest for marriage.
Right.
Vermont didn't do civil union because of civil union. Vermont did civil union as part of the struggle to win marriage.
Right.
And the same is true in every other state. Marriage is a terrific engine of people's understanding of why things have to change. And the other point I would make is that this idea that now, because gay people are stepping up to have the freedom to marry and are close to winning the freedom to marry, somehow we should divert our energies to a project of taking marriage away from everyone
right.
rather than ending exclusion, seems to me just a really non-starter of an idea. Who's going to run around and tell their grandmother that she has to give up her marriage because we're turning it into a civil union?
Right.
I'm picturing that conversation right now. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, why would we want to put ourselves in the business of taking things away from people rather than ending exclusion?
Well, I'm just so amazed by watching this movement grow and grow and grow and gain so much momentum, and now the Million Gay March is planned for June 28th. And it's just amazing that we're there. No.
Well, I have to say, I'm not a big supporter of marches for march's sake. I think that the much more important work is done in the one-on-one, the group-to-group, the person-to-person conversations. And I'd be much more excited about a million gay conversations than trying to pull off a march. I mean, we don't really need to show that we're capable of congregating on the mall.
Right.
We've shown that. What we need to show is that we're in the malls all across this country,
right.
part of the fabric of the country, part of the fabric of every family, and we need to have real conversations with people about why marriage matters, how this exclusion hurts us, why it's wrong. We need to really help them understand it, because a lot of people think they like us, they love us, they care about us. They're our moms, our dads, our family, our friends. They welcome our partners to the Thanksgiving table, but they don't have a clue about how the denial of marriage actually leaves us second-class citizens, no matter how warmly they feel about us. And it's our job to give them that information. If we don't have those conversations, we're not helping them to connect the dots and get there.
Well, so I'm curious then, with a strategy of really diffusing this down to essentially gay folks and allies having conversations with other people.
Mm-hmm.
One of the topics of conversation we've been talking about a lot in the past couple of weeks, particularly with Milk being released, is whether or not we really do need to not necessarily coalesce around a leader, but if we do need more of a leader in the vein of Harvey Milk, whether we need, for all intents and purposes, Evan, you are one of the champions. You are one of the most well-known names out there. And a lot of the complaints post Proposition 8 was really essentially what you said, that there were all these marches all over the place, but they didn't really build towards anything. And one of the questions we've been posing in the past few shows is whether we need a leader to do that, with the gay rights organizations out there kind of being sort of nebulous right now, and people not really sure how to feel about them.
I mean, I understand what people are getting at when they say that, and obviously there is a room for leadership, there is a room for vision, there's a room for inspiration, a good speech, a good vision, a good strategy, a strong leader, a charismatic figure, powerful messengers, all of these do indeed help inspire and move people. And in my book, Why Marriage Matters, in Chapter 9, I talk about why Martin Luther King, and particularly the I Have a Dream speech, meant so much, and the way in the ways in which it crystallized things. But Martin Luther King wasn't the exalted, unequivocal, unanimous hero to everyone in his life that he is to us now. Harvey Milk was not the leader in the way that we now look back and see it, particularly in the movie and so on. And I don't say that in any way to disparage either of them, who were leaders and visionaries and inspirations to all of us. Having said that, though, when you're in the middle of a civil rights movement, which is where we are, it's not about one person being a magic leader and everything just following. It's more about people finding their voice and their part and getting engaged and doing it. And when you're doing it, you don't know with the golden glow of inevitability later that it's going to be perfect and work, but rather you do it and then you have the satisfaction of seeing it work. And the fact of the matter is, we are winning. We are moving things. We did better in the no on 8 vote than we did in the vote 8 years before in the year 2000. Now, that's not good enough. We should have run a stronger, better campaign. And frankly, more of us should have gotten engaged in that conversation in California earlier. It was only in the last few weeks that we saw a tremendous energy and outpouring and engagement, including an impressive amount of money coming from gay and non-gay people into that effort. People really sat back too long, whether complacent or not engaged or not effectively mobilized. But all of that is the No One Eight chapter, and that chapter is closed. We're now in the next campaign. We all can do better this time. And instead of waiting to be asked or waiting for someone to ride in on horseback, pick up the phone, get online, connect up with Vermont Freedom to Marry Task Force or whatever the counterpart group in your own area is, and start doing your part. And that's where the leadership's going to come from.
So everybody needs to be doing something.
And indeed, doing something is irreplaceable, because no one leader, no one speech, no one messenger is able to reach everyone as effectively as each one of us is able to reach the people around us. And having the conversations with the people around us, sometimes having to have it 3 or 4 or 5 times before we get people, and then go out to the next circle and the next circle, that's the way change happens. And in fact, it is happening. We've moved the public enormously on this question in a very short period of time, just not short enough, because all of us want to see it happen as soon as possible.
Right.
But it's within our reach, and we can do it. And particularly in 2009, if we bring in 1 or 2 or 3 more of these states that are within our reach, everything's going to look different going into 2010, and the momentum will again be with us. And I think people really have to, instead of feeling uncertain or looking around just for some magic leader, actually I put it this way. If we made all the progress we made in the last 8 years, the worst 8 years in this country's history in many ways, including winning the freedom to marry, if we were able to do that during the 8 years of George Bush, imagine what we're going to be able to do in the new era that's dawning.
Absolutely. Okay, can I ask my silly question for the night?
Okay.
I'm going to take that as much of an approval as I'm just going to go forward with it. So, do you sometimes wake up and say, I argued a case before the U.S. Supreme Court?
That's funny. Not so much now.
Okay.
But no question about it, that day.
I really want to hear about that day. I want to hear the case, and everyone can read about the case. And I must say, Courting Justice is one of my favorite books, and folks should read about the case. But I definitely want to hear about you woke up and you were going to go before the Supreme Court.
Ken has been waiting to ask about this.
I have, because I'm fascinated by it.
I don't think he meant to interrupt you. He's just waiting to
I want to hear what that was like.
Well, it really was a rooftop experience, no question about it. It's not something I dwell on now, but at that time in my life, and over even for a few years afterwards, no question it stood out as just a remarkable moment in my life for me. Here I had for the 4 months leading up to that day, which was April 26, 2000, in the Boy Scout case, I had felt this enormous pressure on me, not so much afraid, not so much nervous, just terrific pressure, just huge, huge burden. and carry that into the court, you know, surrounded by family and friends and a who's who of the American legal bar. People turned out that day knowing that was the big argument of the year and kind of the sexy, hot case before the court. And all of that was there, and it was kind of almost like a bar mitzvah because everybody was there, and there I was, you know, up to the podium. And I, of course, felt a tremendous weight of responsibility to do right by James, my client, all the kids who wanted to participate in the Boy Scouts and who were looking to it, and, you know, our movement and the country. And after the argument, I came out of the court, and you can actually see these pictures if you go online, and it was this gorgeous sunny day, an amazingly beautiful, brilliant sky, and so on. And I just suddenly felt the weight off me for the first time in 4 months. And I actually just threw my hands up and just, wow, look at this great day, and could really just feel that joy and that excitement about, no matter how the case turned out, that we had stood before the court as a movement and had done well and had seen the court treat gay people with respect.
Right.
No matter how they were going to vote, they, for the first time, didn't use the word homosexual. They used the word gay. And they talked about gay youth. And I felt like no matter what happened with the Boy Scouts, on some level we had won because we'd gotten people to understand that there is such a thing as gay youth. And once people understand that it's not, gays are not some things over there, but they're young people who are part of families, that's winning the war.
Well,
all of that came rushing into me, and I really felt that. And then after press conferences and a celebratory lunch with people and Washington lawyers and so on, the team, including me, we all got on the bus to sort of schlep back to New York, and we're driving along, and my cell phone rang, and I got the news that then-Governor Dean had just signed into law the civil union bill in Vermont. So
that's not bad timing.
On the very same day, these two huge pieces of my work, the marriage fight that had at this point led to civil union in Vermont, and the Boy Scout case that had culminated in the argument, came into fruition on the very same day in that moment. So you can imagine it was a very exciting, important day that really resonated for me and meant a lot.
Well, if you're not going to dwell on it, Evan Wolfson, I'm going to dwell on it for you, because it is just it's just such an awe-inspiring thing to think about. And with the Boy Scouts back in the news again, do you look at that organization differently? Is that something that, I mean, we talk a lot on the show just about how people need to focus their energy so they don't burn out, and with them back in the news, is that something where you look at those stories and say, oh, I was very much involved in that?
Well, I certainly am glad that people continue to work on ending the discrimination and challenging the arguments, because we have to finish the job there. But that was what I was just going to say, that one of the real lessons of that rooftop day is there are really two. One is that it's never over. Good or bad, you always have to keep working at it. You have to keep working to end discrimination in the Boy Scouts. You have to keep working to build on civil union to secure marriage. So no matter how good a day you have, you're still going to have work to do. But the flip side of that is, even when you don't win the battle, you can still lose forward. You can still lay the groundwork for the next victory. So their civil union was treated as the best we could do, that somehow we were not able to get marriage in Hawaii, but we were able to get civil union, if not marriage, in Vermont, and maybe we should be satisfied with that. And within 3 years, we had won marriage in Massachusetts.
Wow.
And the Boy Scouts, although they won the case, they've really lost the cause, because they are now, when people hear the word Boy Scout, there is often likely to think of discrimination or problem with the hierarchy as they do think about the good things. And they understand that there is such a thing as gay young people, and it's wrong to discriminate against them, even if the Boy Scouts get to do it. And all of that were products of this work. And so even a loss can be a win if you keep working at it.
Oh.
You just have such good, optimistic energy. I feel much less angry and much more
calm. And I have to tell you, our online listeners who are writing us like crazy right now are just feeling it, just so inspired. And the phrase temporary loss of marriage is one that we've now received from three of our online listeners.
It's
is
popular.
One that they're going to start using as well.
great. Well, I'm really glad to hear that, and I hope people take that energy and particularly put it to work in winning a few more things, because nothing wins like winning.
Absolutely.
We can win in Vermont. We can win in New York. We can win in New Jersey this year if we do it.
Well, the folks should check out freedomtomarry.org.
Absolutely.
And learn about conversations that you can have. And I particularly liked the push, as you've been talking about all night with us, just the push towards having these conversations and the importance
right.
of that.
Personalize
but you have to
it.
Set up our next song for us, because we've been playing your song selections all night, which folks have been enjoying immensely. Tell us why you chose Make Them Hear You, which is what's going to play us out.
Because that song, of course, comes from the musical Ragtime, which talks about a period of ferment and people seeking to participate in the American dream. And it's the penultimate number in which the hero, though he himself is not going to make it all the way, delivers a charge to the people around him. And the message he gives is the message that I would want to leave people with as well, which is that raise your voice, make them hear you. Because when people hear us, we move them.
Oh, well,
we can't say it. We're stopping there, Evan Wolfson. that is the message that we want to put out there tonight. Evan Wolfson, it is an absolute honor to have you call into our show.
And thanks for playing my songs.
We want you to get some rest and lots of fluids.
Okay, very good.
All right, thanks so much.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Make them hear you. How justice was our battle, and how justice was denied. Make them hear you. Make them hear you. And say to those who blame us for the way we chose to fight, that sometimes there are battles that are more than black or white. And I could not put down my sword when justice was my right. Make them hear you. Go out and tell our story to your daughters and your sons. Make them hear you. Make them hear you. And tell them in our struggle we were not the only ones. Make them hear you. Make them hear you. Your sword can be a sermon or the power of the pen. Teach every child to raise his voice, and then my brothers, then will justice be demanded by 10 million righteous men. Make them hear you. When they hear you, I'll be near you again.
I mean, we still have time left. Like, I just want to stop. We're not going to stop, though.
I know. I just don't even know what to say. He was amazing.
Dude, hey, if you are out there and you know what to say, or you have some thoughts on everything that we've been talking about with Evan Wolfson, and that was Brian Stokes Mitchell singing Make Them Hear You, give us a call at 802-246-6107 if you have some ideas.
We know some people tried to get through while we were on the phone.
Yeah.
And
if you were that person who tried to call us during Evan Wolfson's interview, give us a call back. We want to hear what you have to say. So Evan was talking a little bit about gay youth, and there was a story out there. This actually came out 2 weeks ago, and I completely missed talking about it on the show. This is not a shocker, but it should be said that young gay people whose parents or guardians responded negatively when they revealed their sexual orientation were more likely to attempt suicide, experience severe depression, and use drugs than those whose families accepted the news, according to a new study.
Are you trying to counteract all of the good vibes happening right
now? No, this is our push to not only have people come out. Oh, it's getting towards the end, so I'm going to start. I'm not going to get angry because I'm feeling would be counterproductive.
I wanted to shout out to BU High School, Brattleboro Union High School's mm-hmm. Gay Straight Alliance. I think we're going to hear more from them soon, which is really exciting.
Yeah,
and
no.
I think we might have some of those folks listening. So, hi, welcome to our show, and call in
soon.
Would
be great. It would be great to have them on. And I'm pretty passionate about positive experiences for gay youth. I think this is really more about if you are in that position and you have someone. We've talked a lot about if you are identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, to tell other people, but also people need to think about what your response is going to be before someone tells you.
Right.
So that
it will be awkward.
Yeah. Well, and clearly, according to this study, you can have a huge effect. The way that you respond when someone comes out to you, I don't know, my hands are on my hips, and I'm, the way that you respond when someone comes out to you can have a huge effect. And the thing about this study is, while anecdotally it has been proven any number of times qualitatively, this was one of the first studies to prove it quantitatively. The study showed that teens who experienced negative feedback were more than 8 times as likely to have attempted suicide, nearly 6 times as vulnerable to severe depression, and more than 3 times at risk of drug use. So your response when someone comes out to you is huge.
But that's what we're here for.
That's what we're here for.
We're educating people. We want to welcome our youth, because we know it's hard to be coming into this world. And
I think there are these assumptions that it's so much easier now. No, it's not.
It's not, because it's still probably the first time your parents have heard that from their kid, you know, unless you're one of those lucky people with older siblings who went first and took the sting out of it.
I'm trying to not be angry. I really am inspired by Evan Wolfson and being chastised online by Melanie, one of our online listeners, who's telling me not to end this week angry as I do other weeks. I think it's just having those conversations. I'm just trying to think. I mean, who I can have some of the... Does anybody out there not know that I'm gay?
Nope. Not now.
But I think...
We're going nationwide.
I don't think... And maybe that's the point, is that it's really not about... I'm being introspective. So we're moving from angry to introspective. Maybe
it's exactly not just that you're gay. Out. It's
the experience.
Right. It's the experience of that and what marriage means and how you are involved in the community and how they could be involved as allies or as new members of the community if they're coming out.
And we had that. We even had that moment today of so we closed on our house today.
Oh.
Which is pretty cool. And the lawyer said something about taxes and how this is going to work in taxes. And Andrew and I just looked at each other and said, oh, okay, how is that going to work? And do we have to get a special accountant? Because I don't think both of us can claim it on our taxes. So it's just one of those experiences of it was this really nice process of going through the process and signing every form. And every single form said, Andrew signed here, Ken signed here, and there was no distinction about us being anything other than a couple purchasing a house together. But then we got to the point of, okay, well, and then one of you declares it on your taxes, but not jointly. And we got confused, and it was just another one of those moments that perhaps other not same-sex couples does not have.
Right.
We do have those experiences, even though... Right. We're here in Vermont and things
feel good.
And it's
not always that big. I mean, it can be way subtler than that. You know, I have that problem all the time when people find out I'm single. They ask, you know, oh, well, do you have a boyfriend? And then you're in that moment, you know, is this a friendly person? Is this a dangerous person? What is the situation? And I've gotten fairly good at reading the person, their body language, and trying to piece together everything I've ever heard them say into their reaction before I respond. And that's hard, like facing that every day. You could run into some acquaintance or a stranger or new friend and having to go through it again. And every time it's just a little bit of anxiety that gets added on.
No, and it's even just hearing about your stories at the workplace. So I think that I'm really spoiled. that I work in education. So education just feels disproportionately more gay friendly, which is probably bogus. It's just that I'm completely choosing schools. I could never work at a school where I had to wear a tie, much less work at a school that didn't have a gay straight alliance. Right. And I did that in my professional career. That was my first time out of grad school. I worked at a school in Westchester and felt like the only gay person there, which was completely not true, but just felt like it and was there was one meeting where someone said to me, students were expressing a lot of homophobia during this workshop that a number of us were presenting all over about other issues. And a woman who was a counselor said to me, well, have you considered the fact that they're expressing all that homophobia because you're out? And I was so floored by that. And it was just one of those moments of, wow, I don't want to be the gay guy at work. Like, I wanted to be a little bit more than I wanted to be me and not be this representative. But
right. And that's the question. Do you let people get to know you first and then come out to them because you want them to know you? Or does it hurt more for them to reject you once they already know you?
Right.
And to let that one aspect change their minds?
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
I would like to point out that we are not ending our show angry. We are feeling inspired, and we want people to have those conversations. So your homework, we haven't given homework in a really long time.
We should give homework.
Okay, so folks, homework. That's everyone's homework.
Good.
We will be checking the homework next week. We will be grading it. Online listeners, we know who you are. So we will be grading your homework. We want everybody to have a conversation just about some experience that you had or your experience in general with someone.
Email us.
Yeah, email. Oh, please email us, or just be prepared to present your homework next week and tell us about that conversation, because we want to inspire those conversations. And so, if you want some ideas on how to have those conversations, go to freedomtomarry.org where they talk about those conversations. So,
right. And if you have any stories about conversations you've already had or conversations that come up this week, you can email us at thisshowissogay@aol.com and we can talk about you behind your back
invite you to call in. If you are not a member of the Facebook group, I think you're in the minority.
Yeah, we have millions of
one might say millions or
all
hundreds
around the world.
So join our Facebook group, do a little search there for This Show Is So Gay, and our Facebook group will pop right up. As Becca said, send us an email, thisshowissogay@aol.com. Listen to our podcasts at thisshowissogay.com. Next week, we have Mariah Hansen on. And as many folks know, Mariah Hansen is a promoter extraordinaire and is the woman behind the Dinah Cruises.
Absolutely.
I have a lot of questions about these cruises.
Me too. Can I get one?
That's what we're determined to get you a free ticket with Mariah Hansen.
That's all I want.
Oh, I'm a little worried. That's a lot. That's going to be a lot to try. We're going to do it. We're going to do it.
We could both go and have our little sparring radio show the cruise.
We are going to talk about this next week, but I will tell you right now.
It's going to be a no.
No. I'm not saying that. No, I think it's going to be yes. I am infinitely more inclined to go on a lesbian cruise than I am to go on a gay male cruise. And next
that's
week...
because you're all partnered.
No, you don't say it. Why? No, that's actually not why. So if you are curious, we got to do cliffhangers to get people to tune in next week. So this week's cliffhanger is, why would Ken much rather go, I mean, infinitely much rather go on a lesbian cruise than a gay male cruise?
I think it's because Ken's secretly a lesbian.
If you think that's the answer, you should tune in next week and find out. So Oh, I'm going to get music to cue up for
you
that.
You better.
We're going to start doing cliffhangers. So listen to us online. That's probably how you're doing this right now. You have been listening to WVEWLP 107.7 FM, Brattleboro Community Radio. We want to thank Evan Wolfson. And everybody stay warm out there because it's getting pretty cold.
Indeed.
Have a great week, everybody.